Episode number 208 with Steve Barton. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. I am coming to you. I will be in Vegas very soon, but I'm still in Ventura right here. I got another couple of days before I head out. I'll be out there June 7th, at the latest June 8th. And I'll be out there for about 2.5 weeks until June 24, 25, 26, something like that. Mike and I recorded an episode about 2 days ago, and due to, I don't know whose fault it would be other than mine, but it sounded like the two of us were talking into an empty beer can, and so I'm going to save you guys from that, and I'll re-record here and let you know everything that's going on. Lots happening since the last episode, and I will fill you guys in. Michael Snyderman is out in Las Vegas right now. He's been out there for a couple of days. He sold a bit of a package for some Rio tournaments. I got a few percent of him in that. And so I'm excited. He played one tournament. He had three bullets to fire. He only fired one. Almost bagged day two, but didn't quite get it. It's good that he only had to fire one bullet on that. Played a tournament yesterday that wasn't in the package. He went pretty far in that as well, but again, didn't bag. And today, it looks like he's got a $400 online tournament, of which he's got three bullets for in his package. So I'm excited about that one. We'll see how it goes. We'll have to keep him. I'm going to be watching him on Twitter today, at Mike Snyderman, and track his progress. Carlos just got out there a few days ago as well. He hasn't hit a tournament yet, but he's just getting started. I tried to get some of his package, but he's already sold out, so darn it. I'm going out there very soon. I threw up a package that I'm going to be selling. Actually, I kind of hesitate to even mention it right now, but I'm selling 50% of it, and 47.5% of it is already sold. So there's 2.5 left. It'll probably go sometime today. But if you're listening to this podcast, and go ahead and look up on my Twitter feed, and you can see the pinned up there. And if it adds up to 50%, then it's already been sold. I'm excited about this one. I'm going to be playing some of the bigger events that and more of them than I've ever played. I've got five tournaments in here that are under my package. It's going to be, they're all at the Rio, so these are all bracelet events. One of them is a 1K buy-in. It's a deep stack. And I've got two bullets for that one. It looks like a really good structure, 60-minute levels, just deep stack, good tournament. So I got two bullets for the 1K. There's another one, so this is on the 14th and 15th, and hopefully I bag on the 14th and just continue to go on into day three in that tournament, and I don't have to buy into the $800 one on the 16th, but we'll see how it goes. So I got an $800 one there, and then this one is kind of interesting to me too. The on the 19th at the Rio, we got a $1,500 bounty tournament, so the buy-in's $1,500. And each bounty is $500. So what's interesting to me about this one, now I did an episode on a bounty tournaments a couple of years ago. And one way you can calculate how much these bounties are worth is, okay, so if the total buy-in to the tournament is $1,500 and $500 of that goes towards a bounty on each player, right? How can you really calculate like chip EV when you're dealing with these bounties, right? Let's say you are in the big blind and the small blind shoves all in on you, and it's the first hand of the tournament. You both have, in this tournament, you're going to have 25,000 in chips. All right, you look down at, I don't know, well, it doesn't even matter what your hand is, but Small blind shoves all in you, on you. You're in the big blind, and now you have a decision where you, whether you need to call or fold. Well, you can think of it this way. It's not really 25,000 chip stack versus a 25,000 chip stack, because if you knock him out, you get $500 in real money. Well, how can you compute $500 in real money into chip EV? How do you do that, right? Well, what we could do is we could say that his total stack is 25,000 in chips, right? And the bounty in relation to the total buy-in is one third, right? So we have $500 for his bounty, $1,500 is the total amount. So we get the fraction of one third, right? Now, if you take one third and multiply that by 25,000 total chips, it comes out to 8,333 chips. So think of his shove as not containing 25,000 chips. Think of it as containing 25,000 chips plus 8,333 chips. Okay? So now you can do your math based on, let's say you've got, I don't know, pocket tens or something like that. Put in a range in an equity calculator and that you think he's shoving there. Press play. And then add an extra 8,333 chips to it and see if it makes sense to call or not. So I'm excited about that bounty tournament. Then we have another one, a $1,500 monster stack. Deep stack, 50K in chips, hour levels. I cannot wait. That one's going to be a good one. That one's on the 21st. I've got a list here of about 17 tournaments that one playing each day. The lowest buy-in is $250, and then the highest buy-in is $1,500. And I don't think there's any way that I'll be able to play all of these. Hopefully I don't play all of these, because that would mean that I bageled every single one. Hopefully I have some deep runs here and able to make it in some final tables. I'm excited. The I may be selling action along the way for some of these other tournaments. I think once this episode comes out, I'm going to get a lot of people hitting me up that they want to buy some action. So I may up my buy-ins a little bit and then sell off. There's a lot of 1Ks going on almost every single day. So if you guys want to buy some action, hit me up on Twitter at HUP Podcast. And I may adjust some of my buy-ins here so that you guys that maybe can't make it out to the WSOP, or you can and you want to rail me, we can both get a little sweat going here. Man, I love this time of the year. It's so much fun. Another little update on the scholarship that we do each year. So recently I tallied up all of our profits for the year after overhead and paying Andrew, our editor, and just all the costs that come with having a podcast. And we made $2,500, or right around thereabouts. The rest will get rolled over into next year. And scholarship went out to a gal named Alexa. She's a senior, graduating high school, is moving on to go to college. And each year, the profits and proceeds from this podcast go to a scholarship, and she was the one that won. Real sweet gal, very, very motivated, just very articulate, smart, smart kid, and 4.0 GPA. It was really cool. It was really cool. It's neat to me that I can get on this show and basically just talk poker with on my own, like I'm doing now, or with my buddies, and it goes to a good cause like that. This is something that I would be doing anyways, and you know, the $2,500 isn't really something that I would miss or anything, and it feels good to give it away. And it's really neat that anything you guys get from this podcast, whether it's the Elliott Rowe MP3, signing up for Tournament Poker Edge, donations, some of you guys have donated, gotten a hat, Alex Fitzgerald's training videos, all of that, basically 50% of whatever you buy goes to the show. That goes to pay the overhead, and everything left over goes to a good cause like that. So I just want to take a second, thank you guys for seeing the value in these programs, and it's going to a good cause. Okay, I've been wanting to go over this for a little while. This is one of the concepts we learn from Alexander Fitzgerald, and it's the triple barrel bluff. Okay, now this is not something that you're going to use very often, but when the situation comes up for it that's right, it is it can be really cool. Now most people call a lot of rivers, so there's only very specific spots that you want to use this. All right, and we'll go over those. I got a hand that I think will illustrate it quite well. Okay, now we learned from Alexander Fitzgerald, and you guys can learn this too. You can watch his free video. Just click on the link in the show notes. It's called Master Tournament Poker in One Class. Okay, this concept that we're going to be learning here, triple barrel bluff. Now, there's some caveats, I guess, or I'm trying to think, maybe stipulations, or there's some pre-qualifications. There's some things you want to look for before you even start the triple barrel bluff. What you do not want to do is you do not want to just decide that, well, this hand, I'm going to triple barrel bluff, okay? That's not what we want to do, all right? We want to be heads up against one opponent, all right? Okay, now Alex puts down five different bullet points here of things you want to look for. All right, now this is going to apply a little bit more to a live tournament because you'll be able to see if some of these bullet points are getting checked or not. In an online tournament, it may not be as easy to discern if these bullet points are getting hit, and you'll see what I mean as I read through them. Okay, so the first one is, the tournament should be of some financial meaning to the participant, okay? To the guy you're playing against, to your opponent in this hand. So the way you can know is when you sit down at your live table and you see all the passports getting flown around at the WSOP and they're showing you that. If the guy is telling you that he satellited into this tournament has financial meaning for him, okay? If the guy is from a country that their daily wage, maybe $20 a day or something, and he's in any kind of tournament that is over a few hundred bucks, this is a tournament that has financial meaning to him, okay? If he's from some of the, maybe if he's from Europe, it may not be as financially meaning to him. If you're from the U.S., you can look around the driver's licenses, and you should be able to identify what state they're from pretty quickly without actually having to read them, and you can know that a tournament of $500 may be financially big for someone that's from a more conservative state and not as financially meaningful if they're from New York, right? Okay, so we are, what do we call it? We are profiling here for profit. We'll call it that. We're profiling for profit, all right? So the tournament should be of some financial meaning to the participant, to your opponent, okay? Now, number two. A victim who cares about lasting in the tournament and not being seen as foolish. Okay? So these guys will identify themselves by, they'll be saying things like, I had pot odds there, right? But sometimes they don't use the terms like correctly. And if you were to ask them, which we would never do, but if you were to ask them what the pot odds were, they would not be able to tell you. Okay? That's a guy that does not want to be seen as foolish, okay? He's advertising that he doesn't understand very much about the game, but this is your target, okay? Some financial meaning, and he does not want to be seen as foolish, and he wants to last in the tournament. He does not want to shove all in on the very first hand with pocket kings and risk his tournament life. He paid $1,000 to be in this tournament, and he wants to last as long as he can, okay? His goal is not to make money like it is for you and I. It is to last in the tournament and not be seen as foolish. All right, number three. The victim must cold call pre-flop, largely ruling out jack-jack, queen-queen, king-king, and ace-ace. Most players are going to 3-bet those hands. So if he just limps in pre-flop, or if you raise and he just calls, okay, he probably doesn't have jacks plus, most likely. Right? Okay, so that's the third one. Triple barrel bluff. To triple barrel bluff, I need. All right, number four. The victim must call on a connected flop with a flush draw or a board that is so draw intensive, it is likely to force most players to raise their two pair or stronger. All right? So we want a board of something like 6, 7, 9. We want a board of something like, 4, 5, 7. You see what I'm getting at? Two hearts out there, right? We want some type of draw-heavy board. If we have a board of 4, 5, 7, right, and we lead out, it's very likely there if he has 4, 5, he's going to raise us, right? If he has something like 6, 7 for open-ended and top pair, it's likely that he's going to raise us. Okay? All right. Connected board. Draws out there. All right? So we can, I guess what I'm getting at is if a guy has a set on a board like that, it's likely he's going to let us know on the flop by raising us so that we can throw away we can abandon the triple barrel bluff and not lose any money or any more money. Okay? All right. Now, number 5, the board must have enough drawing cards and over cards on the turn and river that it is likely the victim will fold his flopped top pair. Okay, that's one of the big things that we're targeting here on this triple barrel bluff is we, in a perfect world, what you're going to want is you're going to want the victim to have a flopped top pair with a moderate kicker, something, and then the turn and river come like Jack King, right? We know because he didn't raise us on that flop. We'll use the example of 4, 5, 7. Let's say the guy has something like, 7, 8. Okay. We bet the flop. He just calls. He does not raise us. So it's likely he does not have a set. It's likely he does not have two pair. Right. The turn comes a jack. We bet again. He now takes his time. This is where some timing tells come in. Right. If he just instantly calls like that, you may want to rethink your triple barrel bluff. But when he takes a second and then calls, that can give you a clue that his hand's probably not very nutted, right? The river comes a king. Now his 8-7 isn't looking so hot, right? We fire again, enough to put him all in. At that point, what are you doing there with 8-7 with a run out like that, right? Triple barrel bluff. All right, so let's go over the hand that I played where I think this applies quite well. Okay, we are playing in a 15K guarantee. This is on Bovada. The buy-in was, put myself on the spot here, $27.50. So pretty low buy-in for such a high guarantee. We had hundreds of people in this thing, and I almost just exactly was the bubble boy. It was a little frustrating yesterday. I think I played 6 tournaments, and I was the absolute bubble boy on one of them. I was a couple away from the bubble boy on another one, and this one I must have been about 10 away or so. So a little frustrating yesterday, but I'm ready to go again today. Today is Sunday, and today's a new day, so we'll see. Okay, triple barrel bluff. Here we go. We are in the big blind. We have 21.6 big blinds. And we'll call it 22. And we have Jack 9 of spades. All right, so what we're going to do, we're going to press play here. And okay, so we have Jack 9 of spades in the big blind. It is 8-handed, and the player under the gun plus 1, he calls. Now, after 104 hands, he is a 23-7, no 3-bet, so 0% 3-bet, all right? And he limps. Blind levels are 800, 1600. He's got 13.5 bigs. We've got 21. Folds around to the small blind, who also completes. He has 24 bigs. And then it's on us with Jack 9 of spades. Now, I suppose there could be an argument here for raising, but I just don't really see it because with under the gun plus one only having 13, 14 big blinds, I'm just not I'm not feeling a raise here. We don't want to have him shove all in, and then now we're sitting there with Jack High, basically an average hand, and I don't want to have to call it all in with Jack High. I think that would be a mistake. This hand flops extremely well, and by that I mean you can tell whether you're going to want to continue with this hand or whether you're going to want to dump it pretty quickly when the flop comes out. It's pretty easy to play. Okay? All right, so we check our option, and we go to a flop with Jack 9 of spades. The flop is 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 7 of diamonds. Okay, so we flop middle pair on a draw-heavy board, and the small blind checks to us. All right, so what to do here? Well, if you've gone through Alex's program, Master Tournament Poker in One Class, we know that into a pot of 6,080, the ideal bet is around a third pot right here. Okay, with middle pair, moderate kicker here, we have a gut shot. Okay, so we're going to bet about a third pot into 6,000. We bet 2355. I guess that's a little bit more than the third pot. I guess I can't do math. 10 o'clock last night. Okay, so we bet 2355 into 6,080. The original limper under the gun plus one, he calls. All right, now the small blind folds. Okay, now we're starting. This is when something clicked in my brain, and I'm like, oh, I think we may have a triple barrel bluff here. We'll have to see what comes on the turn and see if it hits the hits all the bullet points, checks all the boxes, and we'll take a look at what we got. All right, so we got Jack 9 of spades in the big blind. Flop is 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 7 of diamonds. We bet out about a third pot under the gun plus one calls. Now, his call right there, think about this. He just limped pre-flop, so we can rule out Jack's plus, right? Most people are going to raise under the gun plus one with Jack's plus. Maybe 7% of the time they don't. But the vast majority of the time, they're going to raise there. So we can be almost certain this guy does not have a made or a premium hand, Jack's plus, right? So check in that box. All right. Now, the victim must call on a connected flop with a flush draw or a board that is so draw intensive, it is likely to force most players to raise their two pair or stronger. So think about this. This guy limped under the gun plus one, okay? Now he only calls our flop bet, all right? On a board of 10-9-7 with two clubs out there, if this man has 9-10, don't you think he's going to raise? Right? He does have top two pair, but that is a draw-heavy board. If a club comes out, he could be dead. If an 8 comes out, he could be dead. This is how he's thinking, right? If he's got 9-7, if he's got 10-7, he has all these two pairs in his because, I mean, really think about it. Who is limping under the gun plus one with 13 big blinds? That's a recreational player, all right? We don't do that, okay? We're either shoving all in, we're raising, but we're not going to limp there. And we're certainly not doing it with these hands, but this is how a recreational player plays, and this is our target, okay? So when he calls there, we can pretty much eliminate. We can eliminate the 9-7. We can eliminate the 10-7. We can eliminate the 9-10. All those two pairs, we can eliminate the sets. If he were to limp there with sevens or nines, it's possible. I don't think he would. I don't think he'd limp there with tens. But if he did flop a set, most players are going to raise here. So what we call this in the business is we call this a capped range. His range is capped. He probably has one pair on this board, or possibly like an 8. Okay? All right, now we go to the turn. The turn is the big, beautiful ace of diamonds. Okay? So we got the ace of diamonds. The total pot is 10,790. Effective stacks are 17,000. So in the triple barrel bluff, what we want to do is we want to make sure that by the river, we're putting him all in. We want to put him in for a decision for all his chips. And ideally, we want him to have something like queen 10. And he's got a call on this horrible run out of a board with third pair. Boom, all your chips. What are you going to do, right? Okay. All right, so the ace of diamonds comes on the turn. Now, our sizing here, we want to size it in a way that we're going to, it will be a, it'll be an all-in for him on the river. We're going to continue to fire here because we're hitting, you know, the turn is not a good card for him right here. And into 10,000, we bet about 5K. All right. And victim calls. So now we've got 12,000 behind, and we've got 20,000 in the middle. All right. Looking back on this, I think I could have gone slightly smaller. Like maybe I could have gone around 4K instead, giving him 13 behind and only 18 in the middle. That might have set up for a little bit better one. But generally, the formula is you want to bet, let's say you bet 2,000 on the flop, then you want to bet 4,000 on the turn, and then 8,000 on the river. You double it like that, right, to make it easy. I ended up going 23, then I went 5, and then I went 12. But I guess whatever works. Okay, so board now is 10-9 of clubs, 7 of diamonds. Turn is the ace of diamonds. Okay, again, we have the jack-9 of spades. Victim calls on the turn as well. Now, if he shoves all in here, this is a pretty easy fold, right? If he's just calling here, he probably doesn't have an ace. He's probably still just got one pair. Maybe he has a naked 8. Maybe he's got a small pair with an 8. Okay, so we go on to the river. The river completes the draws. It's the 6 of clubs. So the final board is ace, 10, 9, 7, 6. Okay? Now, according to Alex's rundown here, the board must have enough drawing cards and overcards on the turn and river that it is likely that the victim will fold his flop top pair. I think we've checked all those boxes here. We do get called by an 8, and I think he could even be folding a 2 pair here. I could be wrong. Maybe that's a little optimistic. But I saw this window. I took it. I put bet enough to put them all in, and he pretty quickly folded. So we pulled off a triple barrel bluff. This is something that I do not use often. I will probably use this move if I'm playing live, once every few days. If I'm playing online and I'm doing a 8 to 10 hour session online, like I'm going to do right after I'm done with this podcast, I'll probably use it once or twice, if that. It's just kind of rare that the situation comes up. Another card that we could have run this bluff on too for the river would have been something like a queen or a jack or a king. Jack maybe. Jack would have given us 2 pairs, so we probably might have just checked that. But you want it, you know, ideally, and again, it's tough to tell in online tournaments because you don't know who satellited it in and who didn't. But you want I'll run through these 5 points again one more time for the triple barrel bluff. You want the tournament of some financial meaning to the participants. If you guys want to like pause this and write this down, I would highly recommend it because you're probably not going to remember it just by listening to me say it. But if you have this written, you can keep it in your car or wherever, read it a few times, and then it'll become instinct. And you'll see these opportunities when they come up, and then you can fire on them. Okay, so number 1, tournament of some financial meaning to the participant. Number 2, a victim who cares about lasting in the tournament and not be seen as foolish. Okay, number 3, the victim must cold call pre-flop, largely ruling out jacks plus. Number 4, the victim must call on a connected flop with a flush draw or a board that is so draw intensive it is likely to force most players to raise their 2 pair or stronger. And number 5, the board must have enough drawing cards and over cards on the turn and river that it is likely the victim will fold his flop top pair. All right. Triple Barrel Bluff by Alexander Fitzgerald. Thank you, Alex. That was amazing. If you want to sign up for his program, Master Tournament Poker in One Class, you can do so by clicking on the link in the show notes or go to headsuppoker.poker, and we have his own little tab up at the top. It says Master Tournament Poker by Alexander Fitzgerald. Click on that. When you do go there, he's got a free 1-hour video you can check out where a lot of the concepts that we're talking about here are in that free video. And if you want the whole program, don't be discouraged at the price. When you type in the code HUPOKER, you will score yourself 75% off, and all the proceeds get kicked back to to the scholarship. Get your free MP3 by Elliot Rowe. 7-minute tilt buster. I know you guys are buying these things up like hotcakes, and sales have gone up as the WSOP is coming around. It's kind of like Christmas time for poker players, you know? So download some of those live MTTs. Live MTTs, MP3s. I do not play a hand of poker unless I listen to that man's voice first. Right after I stop recording here and I send this over to my editor, I'm going to lay down, listen to one of his online MTTs, MP3s, and get ready for the grind on Sunday. I still got 2.5% left for my WSOP package, and keep an eye on my Twitter if you guys weren't able to get in on that and you want some action for some tournaments. What I'll probably do is sell off 20-30% maybe of individual tournaments if you want to sweat for the day. You can track me on Twitter at HUP Podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and here is your weekly motivational speech.
I remember years ago when the alarm used to go off in the morning, the first thing I did was roll over and hit the snooze button. In that instant where you have a choice to either hit the snooze button and go back to sleep in your nice, warm, fluffy, cozy bed, or open your eyes and get out of bed, that's a choice that takes discipline. Now, I didn't have any discipline. I always took the easy route, the road that was more comfortable. The problem is, when you make this decision, because it's the first decision that you make literally the second you wake up, you are letting yourself off the hook. You are literally training your mind to take the easy way out throughout the whole day, which in turn leads to you taking the easy way out the whole month, all year. Discipline is not something that any of us are born with. It's a muscle that we have to train. And I don't care what anyone says, it all starts that first second. How you start your day and that decision that you make in that instant isn't as small as just getting up of bed or not. It's a decision that can shape the rest of your fucking life.